All glories to the sum of the bodies, all glories to the sum of the bodies, all glories to the sum of the bodies. All glories to Sri Guru, Sri Guru, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vrishtaya Bhutade Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvata Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachadesha Tarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasani Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Putting from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 10, chapter 67, verse 3. Sakyo sopachitam kurvan vanaro rasta viplavam pura gram akaran goshan adahat vanim utsrajan. Sakyu, of his friend, he, apachitim, repayment of his debt, kurvan, doing, vanara, ape, rastra, of the kingdom, viplavam, creating great disturbance, pura, cities, grama, villages, akaran, mines, Goshan, cowherd communities, Adahat, he burned, Avanim, fire, Utsurjan, spreading out. Translation, to avenge the death of his friend Naraka, the ape Dvivida, ravaged the land, setting fires that burned cities, villages, mines, and cowherd dwellings. In purport, Krishna had killed Dravida's friend Naraka and to retaliate. The ape intended to destroy Lord Krishna's flourishing kingdom. In Krishna, Srila Prabhupada writes, his first business was to set fires in villages, towns, and industrial and mining places, as well as the residential quarters of the mercantile men who were busy dairy farming and protecting cows. Once, Dravida tore up a number of mountains and used them to devastate all the neighboring kingdoms, especially the province of Anartha, wherein dwelt his friend's killer, Lord Hari. Another time, he entered the ocean and with the strength of 10,000 elephants churned up its water with his arms and thus submerged the coastal regions. The wicked ape tore down the trees in the hermitages of exalted sages and contaminated the sacrificial fires with his feces and urine. Just as a wasp imprisons smaller insects, he arrogantly threw both men and women into caves in a mountain valley and sealed the caves shut with boulders. Once, while Dravida was thus engaged in harassing the neighboring kingdoms and polluting women of respectable families, he heard very sweet singing coming from Rivataka Mountain, so he went there. There he saw Sri Balaram, the lord of the Yadus, adorned with a garland of lotuses and appearing most attractive in every limb. He was singing amidst a crowd of young women, and since he had drunk a Varuni liquor, his eyes rolled as if he were intoxicated. His body shone brilliantly as he behaved like an elephant in rut. The mischievous ape climbed a tree branch and then revealed his presence by shaking the trees and making the sound kila kila. Purport, the word saka mruga indicates that the ape, Dravida, like ordinary apes, was naturally inclined to climb trees. Srila Prabhupada writes, this gorilla by the name Dravida could climb up on the trees and jump from one branch to another. Sometimes he would jerk the branches, creating a particular type of sound, kila kila, so that Lord Balaram was greatly distracted from the pleasing atmosphere. When Lord Baladev's consorts saw the ape's impudence, they began to laugh. They were, after all, young girls who were fond of joking and prone to silliness. Even as Lord Balaram looked on, Dravida insulted the girls by making odd gestures with his eyebrows, coming right in front of them and showing them his anus. Purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, this gorilla was so rude that even in the presence of Balaram, he began to show the lower part of his body to the women, and sometimes he would come forward to show his teeth while moving his eyebrows. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti states that Dravida would come right up to the women and move about, urinate, and so on. Angered, Lord Balaram, the best of fighters, hurled a rock at him, but the cunning ape dodged the rock and grabbed the Lord's liquor pot, further infuriating Lord Balaram by laughing and by ridiculing him. Wicked Dravida then broke the pot and offended the Lord even more by pulling at the girl's clothing. Thus the powerful ape, puffed up with false pride, continued to insult Sri Balaram. But Balaram saw the ape's rude behavior and thought of the disruptions he had created in the surrounding kingdoms. Thus, the Lord angrily took up his club and his plow weapon, having decided to put his enemy to death. Purport, the word avinayam means without humility. Dravida, completely lacking in modesty and humility, shamelessly performed the most wicked activities. Lord Balaram knew of the great disturbances Dravida had caused to people in general, apart from the vulgar behavior the ape was exhibiting in the Lord's own presence. The offensive ape would now have to die. Mighty Dravida also came forward to do battle. Operating a sal tree with one hand, he rushed towards Balaram and struck him in the head with the tree trunk. But Lord Shankarshan remained as motionless as a mountain and simply grabbed the log as it fell upon his head. He then struck Dravida with his club named Sunanda. Struck on the skull by the Lord's club, Ravita became brilliantly decorated by the outpour of blood like a mountain beautified by red oxide. Ignoring the wound, Vivida uprooted another tree, stripped it of leaves by brute force, and struck the Lord again. Now enraged, Lord Balaram shattered the tree into hundreds of pieces, upon which Vivida grabbed yet another tree and ferociously hit the Lord again. This tree, too, the Lord smashed into hundreds of pieces. Thus fighting the Lord, who again and again demolished the trees he was attacked with, Vivida kept on uprooting trees from all sides until the forest was left treeless. The angry ape then released a rain of stones upon Lord Balaram, but the wielder of the club easily pulverized them all. Purport, Prabhupada writes, when no more trees were available, Vivida took help from the hills and threw large pieces of stone like rainfall upon the body of Balaram. Lord Balaram, in a great sporting mood, began to smash those big pieces of stone into mere pebbles. Even today, there are many sports where people enjoy striking a ball or a similar object with a stick or bat. This sporting propensity exists originally in the Supreme Personality of God, who playfully pulverized the deadly boulders hurled at him by the powerful Vivida. Vivida, the most powerful of apes, now clenched his fists at the end of his palm tree-sized arms, came before Lord Balaram and beat his fists against the Lord's body. The furious Lord of the Yadavas then threw aside his club and plow and with his bare hands hammered a blow upon Vivida's collarbone. The ape collapsed, vomiting blood. Purport and Krishna Srila Prabhupada writes, this time Lord Balaram became most angry. Since the gorilla was striking with his hands, he would not strike him back with his own weapons, the club or the plow. Simply with his fists, he began to strike the collarbone of the gorilla. This striking proved to be fatal to Vivida. When he fell, O tiger among the Kurus, Rivataka Mountain shook along with its cliffs and trees like a wind-tossed boat at sea. The word tanka here indicates not only the mountain cliffs, but also the fissures and other spots where water had accumulated. All these mountainous areas shook and trembled when Vivida fell. In the heavens, the demigods, perfect mystics, and great sages cried out, victory to you, obeisances to you, excellent, well done, and showered flowers upon the Lord. Having thus killed Vivida, who had disturbed the whole world, the Supreme Lord returned to his capital as the people along the way chanted his glories. Thus in the purports of the humble servants of Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the 10th canto, 67th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Balaram Slays the Vida Gorilla. So, here we find that Lord Balaram was enjoying pastimes with some young women. Here he actually was in coming from Dwarka at the time. Vida had already pillaged and burned, destroyed many things, and put people in caves and sealed up the caves. So he was getting revenge because Krishna had killed his friend. After all this disturbance, and then he happened to see Balaram enjoying with some young women. And then he began to behave rudely and harass them. And finally, he attacked Balaram, first with trees. Huh? And when all the trees were finished, then he used rocks. And then after that, then he directly attacked with his fists. And we see from the description that he must have been very huge because he could uproot the trees and pull off all their branches very easily. It's described how huge his arms were. So he was huge in size. But actually, when he hit Balaram, Balaram didn't move, even though Balaram appeared to be much smaller. And then Balaram struck him and he died. So the demon met his end
as other demons had previously. This demon was disturbed because his friend had been killed by Krishna. And we find this is often the case. Hiranyakasipu was disturbed because his brother was killed by Varahadev. Or if it's not exactly brother, it could be the friend. Because a friend is killed, someone else attacks Krishna. So in this case, it was a friend. And in either case, they're both demons. The demon gets killed by Krishna, and the friend of the demon is also a demon. He also gets killed by the Supreme Lord. So in most cases, we see in the Bhagavatam, it is Krishna who kills the demons. But here we find Balaram takes the opportunity to kill a demon. And he does this very easily with his hands. He doesn't even use his weapons, but with his hands, he's able to defeat this demon after the demon attacked him many ways. So we see that the demon actually attacked many times, and Balaram actually didn't do too much except he smashed the trees up or he smashed the rocks up. So he wasn't aggressive in his attack on the demon. And we see this happens in many cases also, just as Nrisimhadev fights with Hiranyakasipu. And Nrisimhadev did not show all of his powers. He let the demon attack again and again and again and again. So it's described it was like Garuda playing with a little snake. And he lets the snake go, and then the snake can try to bite him. And then he lets him bite or whatever he can do. He tolerates that. He grabs him a little bit. Then he lets him go, and then he grabs him again. And then finally, after a while, then he kills him. So just like that, here we find Balaram tolerating all the insults, first of all. And then, in spite of the fact that generally Balaram is very angry in mood, he tolerated the demon taking his pot of Varuni and smashing the pot and then acting rudely in front of the women, etc. Balaram tolerated all that. And when the demon attacked, he simply smashed all the trees. And when all the trees were exhausted and there was no more forest left, then he used rocks. And then Balaram smashed all the rocks. And then finally he attacked with his fists. So at that time, then Balaram very easily killed him. So sometimes the Lord also likes to fight. Now usually there's no equal opponent for the Lord, so the fighting is too easy. So this was also the mentality of the Lord in Vaikuntha. He thought, I like to fight, but actually nobody's my equal. So therefore he arranged, or actually wasn't him, it was bodyguards felt, well, if he wants to fight, so therefore we will arrange to fight him. And we will give him a great fight. Even so, because the doorkeepers are also jivas, they're also insignificant in front of the Lord. So, in any case, all these different demons, they fight with the Lord. The Lord enjoys it for some time, but they're actually, the competition is nothing. Whatever strength they show is nothing for the Lord. He can combat it very easily. So, and in this particular instance, we see that whatever Devita did, easily the Lord counteracted and he was not affected at all. So he smashed all the trees that were there. He smashed all the rocks which were there. Nothing could harm him in any way. So this is very frustrating for the demon. The demons, though they are huge and powerful and skillful at fighting, sooner or later, they get exhausted because they have material bodies. They cannot continue to fight forever. So, anyway, the Lord tolerates all this and shows his skill by demolishing everything that Dvida could manage to hurl at him. And when the demon attacked him personally, then the Lord also, without using weapons, attacked him. And easily he was able to kill that demon by striking him on the collarbone and letting him bleed. After the many attempts to attack Balaram, none of which affected him at all, then Balaram finally very decisively killed the demon. And in this way, everything ended for that demon. He had disturbed everyone by attacking different places and setting fire, etc. And then he insulted the women, and then he insulted Balaram. So the price he had to pay was his death at the hands of Balaram. So, as in the case of Krishna, or other forms of the Lord, Balaram also has no real hatred of these demons. Rather, pity or compassion for them, because they are helpless persons. They may show lots of power and threaten and attack, etc., but it's no concern of the Lord. He's completely unaffected by any of this. But they are, of course, misfortunate, because they reject the position of the Supreme Lord. And they think we can attack him and we can kill him, even though it's impossible. And they try to do so, and then the Lord kills them. So he doesn't kill them in all cases. We see cases like Kaliya, in which he does not kill the demon. He lets him go somewhere else. Other cases, he kills them. So according to the situation, he makes sure that these demons no longer cause problems. So one of the reasons for Krishna appearing was that David has complained that all these demons, including Kamsa, are there, and they're obstructing Dharma. And thus, sacrifices have stopped, so we don't get our share. And therefore, the Supreme Lord must come to stop all the demons. So Krishna came, and many of the demons he killed. Some of them he simply subdued, but many of them he killed. So though they are opposing the Lord, though they disturb Dharma, though they disturb the people, the Lord is very merciful. So one of the qualities of the Supreme Lord that distinguish him from other from jivas or from Shiva is that when the Lord kills a demon, he gives him a good destination. He doesn't punish him in the sense of, you know, putting him in hell or lower body, etc. He may kill him and then he gets another body and he can enjoy again in the material world. So that's the normal case when the different avatars kill demons. When Krishna kills a demon, then it becomes exceptional. The demons get liberation and emerge in Brahman, and that way they can cause no harm anymore because they're in Brahman. At the same time, they attain a goal which the yogis and gyanis strive for, so it's something very rare. So he gives them something rare. And in other cases, Krishna puts them in the spiritual world. They got a spiritual body, as in the case of Agasura or Putana or Shishupala. So, and in that case, they can actually cultivate a relationship with the Lord favorably. So the Lord is merciful in all cases. He doesn't hate the demons. But he makes an arrangement so that the disturbance is stopped. However they're disturbing people and obstructing Dharma and causing problems for people, that is stopped. And then he kills them, but then good destination. So from the material point of view, of course, killing is a punishment. We have in material world death sentence. People do crimes, they get killed by the government. They put them in prison and they kill them, execute them. So death is a punishment for them. So that's considered to be usually a punishment. But here, death becomes a privilege. When the demon is killed by the Lord, he gets advancement. He gets a good birth. In the material world, of course, they kill, the government will execute persons. No one can guarantee what's going to happen to them after that. Of course, the death itself is some compensation for their crimes, but then they have other karmas as well to deal with. In this case, by being killed by the Lord, all the bad karmas are gone. And they get some good result also. Of course, when Krishna kills, then they get even more wonderful result. Karmas are completely vanquished, and they may get liberation, or they get the spiritual world. So this shows how the Lord does not really hate anybody. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I'm equal to everyone. Even though the demons are hostile to the Supreme Lord and fight with the Lord, and as well as that they cause problems to other people, the Lord doesn't really hate them at all. And the concrete evidence is that even though he kills them, they get elevation that is rare to achieve by other people. That is because of his compassion. But, of course, compassion means that not only for one person, it should have effect on others. So the killing part is compassion because he stops the harassment that these demons are causing for other people. So he's compassionate to other people, therefore he stops the demon and kills him. But then he's compassionate towards the demon also, and he gives some good result to him according to his nature or whatever. So the Lord doesn't hate anyone at all. So why should he give them liberation good result or whatever? It is because contact with the Lord, even in fighting with the Lord or trying to kill the Lord, creates auspiciousness for that person. The Lord is full of all wonderful qualities, and even if the demon contacts the Lord and gets killed by him, that contact gives some auspiciousness to the demon. However, in the case of Krishna, it is very special because in the case of Krishna, the demon, on seeing Krishna, develops intense concentration upon his wonderful form. And this acts to completely purify him. So without the with that purification, if the Lord kills him, then he may get some ordinary destination, birth in the material world. But when the demon is purified by concentration on Krishna and he kills them, then they can get liberation. Or they can even get prema in the spiritual world because they've been purified completely. The mere presence of the Lord is, we can say, compassion, and it starts purifying everyone. So when people see Krishna, even the demons, they concentrate on him. So therefore the Bhagavatam says that even in hatred, concentration on the Lord is beneficial. Normally it doesn't look like how it should be. But if that hatred is intense and the concentration is on Krishna, the concentration becomes a meditation, and this acts to purify the demon of all his bad qualities. So this is the particular nature of Krishna. So therefore Krishna is called all attractive. He has such wonderful qualities that even the demon becomes attracted to him in spite of the fact that he hates the Lord. So he gets attracted to that wonderful form and concentrates on that form, and without his knowing it, then his anartas and karmas and everything are dissolved. So it may not be apparent. It doesn't look like the demon has changed or whatever. Shishupal didn't look like he had changed anything at all up until the last moment. But we can say the same thing about Ajamil. Ajamil didn't look like he had changed, but actually all his karmas were gone. But it looked like he was still doing sinful activities for some time. He was still attached to his son, still attached to the prostitute. But actually all of his karmas were gone. So the external appearance of the demon also is not always doesn't give us the true nature of the demon inside. So he may be, he's constantly getting purified by thinking of the Supreme Lord. And at the right moment, then the Lord kills him, and then he gets some benediction from the Supreme Lord. So by killing the demon, then the Lord makes arrangement that many things are accomplished. The demon is stopped from all of his nefarious activities, and the people are saved and delivered from his harassment, and simultaneously benefit for the demon, and simultaneously the Lord gets some enjoyment. He gets the enjoyment of fighting with the demon and virya. He gets some virya rasa out of that. And then he gets to exhibit his compassion by awarding a good destination afterwards. So everybody gets some benefit from the actions of the Supreme Lord, as we see here. So in this case, it was Balaram, special form of the Supreme Lord, almost like Krishna. So therefore, Davida must have got also good destination. There was no problem for him, in spite of the fact that he was a demon. What is free will and what is consciousness? Are they both the same? Well, consciousness is the nature of the jiva and the Supreme Lord, which means that they know, they have awareness, and they can know things, they can experience things, and they can know themselves, and they can have the awareness, I am suffering, I am happy, etc. So that is what consciousness is. It means awareness. So this is the quality of Supreme Lord and jivas. It is not the quality of matter, prakriti. Prakriti and any object made of prakriti has no awareness of itself. Cannot get knowledge, cannot experience. Objects can be the experience of a jiva or the Supreme Lord. The jiva can say, I like that object, or I don't like that object. But the object itself cannot have an experience. So consciousness is what distinguishes the jiva from and the Supreme Lord from prakriti. Time, of course, also is unconscious. It's part of maya. So it is unconscious. As well as karma. Karma itself is unconscious. So that the jiva and the Supreme Lord are conscious, and then they can choose what to be aware of. That's their free will. The jiva can choose to look at a flower, or look at the sky, or look at the water, or whatever. Be aware of something. So whatever choices he makes, that's his free will operating. And the same with the Supreme Lord. So that's we can say, the nature of the Lord and the jiva. However, there's a little bit of a difference. The consciousness, the Lord is conscious, the jiva is conscious, but the consciousness of the jiva can be overcome by ignorance. And he has knowledge of things, but can also make mistakes. He can mistake, and instead of thinking an object is this, he thinks it's that. He says there's a snake, but actually it's a rope. Whatever. A common example of mistake. So the jiva can do this. Lord cannot do that. If the jiva is nitya-siddha or sadhana-siddha, then also jiva does not make that mistake. But jivas and the material world are all in mistake. I am the body. That's their big mistake. And they identify with matter. So the consciousness of the jiva is there, but not perfect. Can be subject to ignorance. The free will is there. And even if the jiva is in ignorance, he can use his free will. Still, he is limited. The Lord's free will is unlimited. The Lord can do anything, go anywhere, etc. Manifest anything simply by his will. Jiva does not have that power. Jiva cannot create things with his mind. He cannot go anywhere. He is subject to the law of karma. He cannot enjoy anything at any time. So the Jiva is severely limited, even with his free will. But there's some free will operating as long as the Jiva is conscious. But there's limitations on him. If the Jiva is in the spiritual world, less limitation. So it is said there, the Jiva is satya-sankalpa, whatever he desires is manifested. But still, Jivas cannot create universes. They cannot manifest avatars, etc. There's a limitation on how far their free will goes as well. Yeah, special mercy, very special mercy. A combination of mercy, plus of course the fact that Krishna is so attractive that it helps to purify them. There's two things operating there. In this case, one aspect of mercy was that she dressed up like a cowherd gopi. So then Krishna said, okay, because of that, he became so compassionate for that reason. Said, okay, we'll give her a body of a nurse in the spiritual world because she was trying to feed Krishna and poison him. So, and she had the dress of a gopi, a cowherd woman.
That is the case, you see, material guru, so many Shudu guru, they are also dressing like a guru. Like Shudu guru, the brilliant guru, they are also dressing like a guru, teaching some philosophy also. And Putan also, I think, an example of the Shudu guru, that Putan, pretenders, Putan.
Pretenders?
Yeah, Putan, example is a pretender, and it was like a Shudu guru, yes.
Yes, yeah.
So, basically, that, those are cheating as a guru. So, what would be the destination?
Cheating?
Yeah, pretending as a guru. Pretending as a guru.
Gurus who cheat, what will be the destination of that?
I mean, they're pretending to be the Supreme Lord.
False guru, you can say.
So, what happens to them?
Buddha deceived the Lord.
Oh, okay. Well, that was a special case. And, of course, that was also directly in relationship with Krishna. So normal false gurus are not, when Krishna is there, they're not with Krishna at that time. So, they're not trying to serve the Lord in any way. Rather, they're trying to cheat people and deceive them, etc. So, the destination of people who do that, that fool people and give them material destinations, then they get hellish punishment for that. If that person happened to meet the Lord directly somehow or other and contact the Lord, then of course they get some benediction because they get touched by the Lord. But in most cases that's not so. So we see great demons not just fooling people as false gurus but trying to kill the Lord. They get great mercy because they're touched by the Lord and killed by the Lord personally. But these people are not. They don't have direct, and they don't get killed by the Lord, so therefore they don't get such destination. And, of course, they're not concentrating in hatred on the Supreme Lord also. They're concentrating on their own material desires. Well, in special cases, when the Lord is personally present, some personalities get killed by the Lord. It's not that the Lord killed everybody personally when he was present. Certain big demons, yes, he killed them, and they got some benediction. But that's only when the Lord is present. So the Lord is not present now, so we can't use that excuse and say, okay, we can do all sorts of big sinful activities and then we get liberation, because they're not going to get killed by the Lord. And of course, the idea of committing sinful activities on the, you know, on the strength of chanting the name or of doing devotional service, that also makes it worse. If they have no offense, if they have offenses, then it may not be complete. The case of Ajamil was, he had no offenses at all, and he accidentally chanted the name Narayana, so that he got all his karmas destroyed. They may have previous offenses. If they don't, fine, then all the karmas get destroyed.
So
also, they may have some offenses in the last life or this life or whatever, so that will impede the destruction of karmas. But still, some karmas are destroyed. If there's no karmas, then even past, present, future karmas all can get destroyed by Namabhas. But you may not be aware of it. The body doesn't change. They may look like they're ordinary persons again. So at least the Yamaraj cannot touch them. We don't know. We don't know. No. Well, they chant in hatred. Like Shishupal chanted Krishna's name constantly in hatred.
But notice people don't even have time to spend time chanting. Why does she spend time chanting for hatred?
Well, because in hatred, they will insult him by chanting his name and thinking of him in hatred. That's only impulse. So in that sense, this is our opportunity for concentrating on the Lord. Now, on the other hand, it's not favorable. It's not bhakti. So even though when the Lord is present and he kills them, they get a good destination, they may go to the spiritual world, even the destination they get is nothing in comparison to what the devotee gets when he gets a spiritual body. The relationship with the Lord is much diluted, much weaker than whatever the devotee gets.
When you go preaching, the common question people ask, not a blade of grass moves before the sanction of the Lord. Why is the Lord waiting for that particular demon to make so much simple activity? At last he goes and kills him. He knows beforehand what this person will do. Why can't he smoke?
Well, the Lord wants to accomplish by one act many things. So, in the case of Shishupala, he was waiting until he had been completely purified, so when he touched him, then he would get prema. So, that was that case. Other cases, we find he waited till the battle of Kurukshetra to extinguish all the final elements like that. He waited and waited and waited. And people were wondering, why is he waiting like this? What's he doing? Why does he tolerate the suffering of the Pandavas and this and that and whatever? It was so that at a certain point he could end everything like that. And then the Pandavas could rule the whole kingdom peacefully. So the Lord waits for the right opportunity so that many things can be accomplished at once.
And the weight of the long course, many others are affected by the demons. So many being killed by the demon, harassed. So that waiting period caused problems to other living entities.
Yeah. Of course, they also have their karmas to deal with. Many have karmas to deal with. So all we can do is say that the Lord knows the proper time by which the best time so that there's the most benefit for that particular activity of killing the demon.
Mumrat, the extent of the free will a jiva can have, does it depend upon the body it has or...
Well, obviously, the animals or the plants don't have much free will. They have something, but not much. Human being has much more. But even the human being is limited by his karma. So it's according to the body and the karmas that the free will gets limited.
But the Nitya Siddhas and Nitya Suris also are limited free will.
Well, limited to a much lesser extent because there's no karma involved and they can assume any body they want and any object can manifest for them to that extent. But they can't create material universes. That's all.
Rudra Sri Srimad Bhagavatam ki.